Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
There you go. When Joe stops saying it, Dermot will stop saying it. Good afternoon. On this Thursday afternoon, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. You may have heard Joe mention Maeve Mooney at the end of the show. Well, Maeve worked on this particular programme for years, and we'll all be sad to see her leaving the Radio Centre, but she's moving on to Pastures New, and we wish her well and we wish her the best of luck. And it is very much their gain and our loss here in the Radio Centre. So good luck, Maeve. Well, it's odd, isn't it? The mixed messaging continues, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Hazel Chew, you heard it there in the news. The Lord Mayor of Dublin is saying there's going to be port to lose a plenty this weekend. And there's going to be bins all over the place. And so what is the message? Why don't... Will somebody explain to me, right? So they're going to open everything on Monday. They saw what happened last weekend. The weather forecast is good for this weekend. And then you hear Simon Harris, who's always a rock of sense, explaining the situation. Listen to him, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. It's only 30 seconds. He was on Morning Ireland this morning.
Now, I do think we're going to be in a different situation, if I may just say, when the reopening of outdoor dining and outdoor pubs and bars starts from Monday. Because I think what happened last weekend, and this is not in any way a judgment, last weekend we had really good weather. We had lots of people who wanted to meet up and see people outdoors. They'd been told outdoors was safer, and they didn't have many places to go. And that caused congregation. So rather than finger wagging, I think we have to look at how do we actually better prepare for that? How do local authorities better prepare? And I do think as we see more places open now, there will be more places for people to meet.
And of course, well documented that Tony Holland witnessed that congregation, lovely word, caused congregation last weekend, and he wasn't too pleased about it. And yet you have the Lord Mayor saying, well, you know, this is going to happen, so we might as well facilitate people and provide amenities, as in bins and loos. But why don't we follow what he says? Why don't we just move it, the opening of outdoor facilities and pubs and restaurants, to Friday? As opposed to Monday. Will somebody explain why that doesn't happen to me, please? 51551. And on outdoor activities and entertainment, James Vincent McMurrow's tickets went on sale today for one of the first gig. It's an open-air gig in the Ivy Gardens. And it sold out in 30 seconds or 30 minutes or whatever. There's only 500 people allowed in. And Vicar Street, they're having a gig at the beginning of July. And they invited us down this morning, myself and Niamh, who produced the show, because Harry Crosby, impresario extraordinaire, he's given the Vicar Street a lick of paint. Now, he's not doing it himself. He's employed people to do it. And one of the people he's employed is Joe Caslin. And we spoke to Joe Caslin on the show. He's an amazing mural artist. He's a lot more than that, but that's one of the things he does. And you'd know his work from the old Jury's Hotel overlooking Waterford City. It's up there in the hill. He did that amazing mural of the man in black and white. And then he did a thing for the National Art Gallery as well, and that's why we spoke to him. Anyway, he's doing the Mount Rushmore of music as a mural inside Vicar Street. That's one of the big changes, and they're giving it a lick of paint, and you know it's going to look more inviting and more boudoirish, I suppose. That sort of low lighting and reds and all that, and it looks great. So they're having a gig at the beginning of July, but they still don't know when they'll be open to everybody. And as Daniel O'Donnell said earlier in the week, at the end of last week, it probably doesn't make sense for a lot of people who work in the music industry to open the venues unless they can get 75-80% of the people in. There's no point in doing it with 10% of an audience. It just doesn't make financial sense for them. So it remains to be seen when we'll get back. And I have to say, walking into Vicar Street, I just got a bit of a shiver. You know, because you're brought back, aren't you, to all those good times you had there, laughing out loud to Tommy Tiernan, singing along to Damien Dempsey or Aslan or whoever. So it was great to be back, but I don't know when everybody else will be back. Anyway, the good news is, and I don't know when this is going to happen, but it's in train now, that we hope to do a show from Vicar Street in, you know, the coming months, and we're going to invite people to come along. We don't know what numbers will be invited. We're going to have stars on the stage. They'll be singing. They'll be making us laugh. You know, so it'll be sort of a celebration of return to some sort of normality. But even being in Vicar Street this morning suggested to me that we're getting there. And I was reminded of Leo Varadkar earlier in the week, and he was saying for every week we delay, probably not the right word, but for every week we wait, there's another 300,000 people vaccinated. So we shouldn't rush into anything. And we don't want what happened to Christmas. Now, it's never going to happen because there's so many people vaccinated. But we don't want even a small fourth wave of this thing. So we need to be a little bit patient. And while we were down in Vicar Street, we met a very proud new granddad, Alan. He was one of the painters down there. And he said he wanted to send all his love to his daughter, Keely, who gave birth to little Cara in Holles Street last night. So well done to everybody involved. Alan, granddad for the first time, like Des Cal this week. Keely, mother, and Cara, welcome to the world. Another email that came in. You were talking about scallion sandwiches yesterday and reminded me that when I was growing up in Wexford, we called people from Carlow scallionators. A funny nickname, but fondly said, says Dermot. Was that an insult? Was it a slag? What was it? Go away, you scallionator. It's like, I suppose, we would have referred to people from Dublin as Jackeens. Now, I don't know if that's an insult or whatever, but it was meant in sort of jest, just slagging. Go on, you Dublin Jackeen, you. And of course, they were saying things like, go on, you culture, you bogger. Go on, you scallionator. Mick has been on from Wicklow, not Carlow, although they do touch on each other, don't they? Mick sent us in a poem before, and he's been inspired by cold beans with a salad and scallion sandwiches, and he's written another poem. Well, I'll give it a go. I'll give it a go just for you, Mick. It needs a bit of musical accompaniment. Aha! Where I'm From by Mick Larkin, resident of Wicklow. I'm from rashers and eggs, homemade brown bread, Johnny Daly's own sausages. That's how we were fed. I'm from the pan of chips made with cooking oil and that big lump of ham your mother would boil. I'm from that great time you played outside all day. You were called in for your dinner, then back out to play. I'm from the phone box. You wrote someone a letter back then. We stopped and we talked. Life was simple but better. I'm from the eerie silence of a Sunday on our road. Life was really so simple in our wonderful abode. Thank you, Mick Larkin, for bringing us back. Yeah, the chip pan, huh? The chip pan. Dangerous enough yolks back in the day, chip pans. Ray was on, different Ray, Ray Mahigan. He says, I was listening to your show about 2 years ago. And you had a guest on talking about a shop in Dublin that specialised in selling and repairing Doc Martin boots. I can't remember the name of the shop and I can't find it on Google. Could you please tell me the name of the shop? Ray, what do you think we have? Some sort of data system that we can just do that, type it in, Doc Martens into a computer and it spews out the name of the shop? Well, we sort of have that in Neil, because Neil's a great memory. And he remembers that we spoke to Isaac Jackman. Is it Isaac Jackman? Yeah. Isaac Jackman 2 years ago, and he's from Charlemagne Street in Dublin. He has a cobbler's. And when he was on to us, he spoke about how they can now repair Doc Martens and they can stitch on new soles and all that sort of thing. So here's your man. He's your man to get on to, Isaac Jackman. Ray. Okay. So that's that. Joe Dolan and his song, You're Such a Good-Looking Woman, is featured on the soundtrack to the movie Cruella, which is getting a lot of attention at the moment. It's new to Disney and it's a remake of, Cruella de Vil. But it features, that song, which is great for fans of Joe Dolan.
Oh me, oh my, you make me sigh, you're such a good-looking woman.
Boom. Ah, yeah. Joe Dolan. The late, great Joe Dolan. I remember seeing him in the CYMS Hall in Kildare. So many people wanted to see Joe Dolan back in the day that they had to open up the snooker room. Yeah, that they covered the snooker tables and the overflow from the dance hall went into the snooker room. And I remember you had to plan your toilet going activity because it would take you so long to get from one side of the hall to the other side where the loos were that you had to, I think I might want to go to loo in 15 minutes time because it was just jammers, all there to see Mullingar's Finest, Joe Dolan, and that would have been one of the big songs, probably held it off for an encore at the end. Anyway, he's featured in a Disney movie now. Who would have thought it? Who would have thought it? That song was number 4 in the Irish charts back in 1972, number 13 in the UK charts. And Craig Gillespie is the director who used it in the movie. Now, it doesn't make it onto the soundtrack, which doesn't really matter that much anymore. It does make it onto the playlist you'll get if you go onto Spotify. And there's loads of great songs there. There's this one by Blondie. Yeah. It's probably been used in more movies than most songs, one way or another. And there's this one. The Electric Glide Orchestra. A Living Thing. And Ike and Tina Turner there as well, and The Clash, Should I Stay or Should I Go? It's a good soundtrack. It's a good soundtrack. And while we're on soundtracks and movies, new research finds watching a film at home is less enjoyable than watching it in the cinema. Ah, right, they needed research to prove that, didn't they? So, yeah, like, there's no comparison, really. No comparison. Because, you know, the things you can do in the cinema, firstly, it's big sound, big picture, comfy chairs, no children. Did I say no children out loud? Sorry. No interruptions. No having to pause it. No getting up to cut up an apple or whatever you have to do. Anyway, so they've spent good money on research to tell us something we know already. It's more enjoyable to watch a movie in the cinema than at home. There you go. If you're watching telly tonight, you might want to watch Alien and James McCauley. We spoke to them last Friday. They're the inventors of the Wriggler, which is a changing mat. For obstreperous little babies who don't want to get their nappies changed. And they're on Dragon's Den tonight on BBC One, 8 o'clock, looking for investment. So they couldn't tell us, obviously, ahead of the programme how they got on. But I have an inkling just from their, you know, their posture and just the way they were smiling and all that, that they got on well. You can tune in and watch that tonight, BBC One. Now, let's see what you're saying. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Providing more loos means people can spread out to different areas instead of just large numbers in Stephen's Green and surrounding areas, says that person. And the people, the congregation, are mainly young people, students. It's a rite of passage. They will not be paying €6 a pint to go inside to a pub, says that person. And the government told me to go outdoors and enjoy life. Yeah, they said, think outdoors this summer. And they have posters all over the place, lovely posters. I do, but avoid large seething masses of people who don't give a damn, says Mike. And I'm looking for a word that I can't think of, but maybe your listeners can help. Ah, they love that sort of thing, Bill. What have you got to say for yourself? Well, the word describes the atmosphere of an empty building that is usually full of people and joy and fun and energy. For example, the atmosphere that you might have felt in Vicar Street this morning, or the atmosphere that is felt in an empty school in summer. The word describes the atmosphere of a place that is usually full of life but is now empty. I know the word exists, but I can't remember it. Anybody can help Bill? That's a great description, Bill, of the word. It's haunting. It's not haunting. No, eerie. It's not eerie. So a building that's normally full of life but is empty, like Vicar Street this morning, or a school during summer holidays. Help Bill out, please. 51551. The Scallionator's name for Carlow people, myself one of them, came from a 19th century travel writer who commented on the abundance of scallions that were grown in this country. Sorry, in this county, the Association Stoke, Peter and Carlow. So that's where Scallionators came from. We'd referred to the Dubs as bathers in Wexford when they flooded the area during the summer months. Aha. That's James, now in Dublin 7. And the CYMS Hall, I remember having to go to the bingo with the granny. You came home smelling of Carol cigarettes for a month, says Carl. Yeah. I remember coming out from a nightclub or something. Sorry about all this nostalgia, but it, you know. Coming out from a nightclub and looking in the mirror in the middle of winter thinking I had a tan. And then I realised after a while that was actually the amount of cigarette smoke on my skin had given me that sort of slightly tanned colouring. Sad, isn't it? That were back in the day. Now, our quiz of today. Today is the 3rd of June and we're looking for two people to answer 5 questions each on events that happened on this day over the years. And we have a prize. Yes, we do. From the good people in the Castleknock Hotel. They want us to tell you about their Missed Moments packages. An opportunity for you to celebrate the things you may have missed out on last year, like birthdays, anniversaries, date nights, etc., etc. There will be balloons, bubbles, and there will be cake as well. and castlenockhotel.com for more information on their missed moments packages. So two people after 4 o'clock, you might win the prize. You'll have a bit of crack anyway. And you have to answer our qualifying question. Here it is. In which Irish county would you find the town of Tuam? In which Irish county would you find the town of Tuam? 1850-715-900. Thank you. So we might as well play a song from Cuella. Do you want to hear Joe Dolan in full, or do you want to hear Blondie in its entirety, or ELO in its entirety? What are you going? They're going for third one. Third one. He says third one. There you go. He's showing his edge now. We might squeeze in Joe before the end of the show. Nothing like a Joe show. But he says he's the producer. He's the boss. Electric Light Orchestra, Living Thing, good afternoon. ELO, Electric Light Orchestra on Radio 1, 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Bill is looking for a word. A building that's usually full of life but is not anymore, like Vicar Street or a school or whatever. The building was bereft of life. How about that? He's looking for one word. Desolate. Empty building, soulless, says Anna in Dublin. Ray, the word for an empty place that's usually full is heaven, says Paul in Tremor. And dead atmosphere word, is it quiescent? Q-U-I-E-S-C-E-N-T. I've looked that up. I don't think that's it. Because that's the explanation for that is in a state or period of inactivity or dormancy. I see it could be used. Yeah, I wonder if that is. How about melancholy for the word your listener's looking for? Such empty buildings have a forlorn and wistful ambience. Ooh, look at she now. Rising to Bill's challenge. Blonde Hoffman says, Ray, is this the word? Kenopsia. That sounds like a condition. K-E-N-O-P-S-I-A. The eerie, forlorn atmosphere of a place that is now abandoned. Yeah, and we looked it up. Eerie, forlorn atmosphere of a place, usually bustling with people, but is now abandoned and quiet. A school hallway in the evening, an unlit office on a weekend, vacant fairgrounds, an emotional after image that makes it seem not just empty, but hyper empty, with a total population in the negative. Wow. Who are so conspicuously absent, they glow like neon signs. Ah, Bill, I think that's the word. I think we found it. You can thank Blonde Hoffman there. Kenopsia. Or is it Kenopsia? See, I'll have to get on to the lady on the dictionary with the pronunciations. Reese Scallionators. See, it sounds sort of nearly sci-fi-esque, doesn't it? The Scallionator. Believe it or not, Carlow was main source of onions in the 19th century. Read Jack Eanes, it's an insult, depending on your view of people waving Union Jacks when Queen Victoria visited Dublin during the famine. Apparently, she received a warm welcome by the people of Dublin. John Kilkenny, native of the kingdom, full of information. Thank you very much, John. Thank you. That's great. Sorted that one out for Bill. 51551 ray@rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, did you know that this month is the 10th anniversary of the Irish citizenship ceremonies? They were introduced by Alan Shatter back in 2011. And since then, 150,000 people from 180 countries have received Irish citizenship. The latest one was done virtually on the 27th of April 2021, obviously due to COVID-19. And I'm joined now by two of those new Irish citizens. Coincidentally, both of them are wonderful musicians. We have Shahab Kuhi in studio. How are you doing, Shahab?
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And you've brought with you
my instrument, my santur.
Your santur. More about that in a moment.
Sure.
And down in a booth somewhere, we have singer Camille O'Sullivan.
Hey.
Hey. Hi, Camille.
I'm still delighted to become a citizen.
You're in my ears. Yeah, I can hear it. Thanks so much for coming in. I'll start with you, Camille, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So I just presumed you were Irish. I knew you had an interesting, you know, heritage, but I just presumed you were Irish. But I presumed
wrong. So did I.
Did you? Right, okay.
So basically, I came here when I was 3 months old. My mum is French and my dad is third generation Irish. Nobody came back except for my father. We were born in London when we were little, my sister and I. And he wanted us to be brought up in Cork. and he naturalized after I was born. So this became a long journey of becoming a citizen. And I kind of foolishly thought I was for a long while, and because I was, you know, doing votes for elections and stuff. But it was at a time when I was supporting a lot of the campaigns for some amendments.
Yes.
And the guy said, "Oh, Camille, I'm so sorry, but you can't." And that really threw me, because sometimes I was touring out of the country and I didn't realise that was the case. So
Okay. Let's go back to the beginning then. So so travelling outside the country, what passport were you using?
I had a British and a French one.
Okay.
So I had that, and I used to be embarrassed. I used to cover them in, you know, those fake Irish passports you could get.
So you put an Irish passport cover on a British passport.
Yeah, the passport people always loved me.
Okay, I'm sure that's a crime somewhere.
Well, they sell it as a thing. You take it off when you go to
the
thing.
Yes, of course. I jest. So I got a hint of sort of a little bit annoyed with your dad, because if he had naturalised before you were born, this wouldn't have been an issue.
No, it wouldn't. And I spent a long kind of time going to different buildings, trying to find out what I could do. And it came out anyway at the end, because they had to look for my dad's stuff that I couldn't. So that kind of sent me on a journey of having to, of course, you have to make quite a large payment. I didn't have that money at the time. And then go and get all your information for proof. And that was a bit of a difficult thing. Like, people were very helpful, but because I was a touring artist, then they said you mightn't be able to actually get a citizenship because you're out of the country more than 40 days a year.
Right.
So there was this whole thing. So, you know, it was a good kind of 4-year kind of process, you know.
Right. Well, congratulations. You're now an Irish citizen. I won't ask you your age.
Definitely don't. Yeah. Old enough to know better, but really happy.
Shahab, can I ask you your age?
Of course. I'm 26.
26. Okay. And you're originally from Iran.
Yes.
How long are you in Ireland?
9 years now.
Okay.
Yes.
And just explain why you came and who came before you and who was with you and all that.
At the moment, I'm living with my parents and my brother. But my dad had been living in Ireland before we all moved to Ireland.
Right.
And we joined him in 2012.
Okay. And what age were you when you came over?
17.
17. Okay. Yeah. So you were getting stories about this country from your dad then?
Yes.
What was he saying?
Well, the first story that I got and my first kind of impression from Ireland was the game between Iran and Ireland in 2002.
Oh yes, it was a qualifier.
Yeah,
it was a big game. Yeah,
and yes, and that was my kind of first picture of Ireland.
Right. You know? So
we sadly lost the match.
But we've the best fans in the world.
Well, I was wearing I was wearing the Irish jersey.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, because my dad sent me the jersey.
Did he? Right?
Yeah,
you're a brave man.
Yeah, and I was supporting Iran but wearing Irish jersey.
Yeah. Because their colours are green and white as well, are they?
Yes. They sometimes
wear green and white. Yeah. Okay. Now, as I said in the introduction, you're a talented musician.
Thank you.
And in Iran, you can go to a music school for secondary school.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there is a special school that you can go and study music. Only music.
Only music?
Only music. Well, you will study mathematics and science and other stuff, but your main focus would be music.
Right.
They train you to be a musician.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so at the end of that then, do you go on to a third level and do more music?
Yes, you can if you want, yeah.
Okay.
But I didn't get to that stage. You know.
And there'd be a national orchestra, would there?
Yes, there's a symphony orchestra and there's a national orchestra as well.
And you would have at some stage aspired to be part of that, would you?
Yes, if I had stayed in Ireland, in Iran, and I studied in Iran. So
okay.
Yes.
So you came over here when you were 17. That's an odd time to come over because I'm sure you had a lot of mates and everything back in Iran.
Yeah, I still do have a few friends, but I think I have more friends in Ireland than in Iran at the moment. You know.
Okay. Where do you call home?
That's a very difficult question, you know, because when I go back to Iran, I'm telling my grandmom and grandfather that I want to go home. And they're like, "You're home."
Yes.
I said, "No, I want to go home."
Yeah.
And they're like, "Okay, home."
Yes.
And then when I'm living in Ireland, they say, "I want to go to Iran, which is home." You know.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know which one is home. I think they're both are home.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's nice to have two homes.
Yeah, it is nice. Yeah. Camille, what was the virtual ceremony like?
It was really moving, actually. I mean, I cry at the best of times, but I felt very honoured and privileged. And I loved seeing all the, you know, Jahab's music was so beautiful at that event. And then the Gardaí band were playing. We had to stand while they made us sing the anthem. And then we all stood for the ceremony to repeat our citizenship. And there was different stories, all these different people, and for all very different reasons, wanting to become Irish. And it was just, I mean, I was kind of floored by it. And it was one of a really special day, you know, really special, you know.
And you did it from the comfort of your sitting room.
Yeah, I had to sing a song myself. Right. And I kind of like, you know, hiding. I've enjoyed hiding away, I think. But it was so unusual. And my partner was coming in and out, kind of hearing me sing the anthem, going, what is she doing now? The cat was looking, going.
And did he photobomb it?
I'm not sure. I think he might have done it by mistake at one stage.
That's what I recognise your man. No, that's your man from Love, eh? That's your man. I know that guy. He stole your thunder a bit,
well,
maybe.
Yeah, no,
he'd never do that. He'd never do that. And we've had Justice Brian McMahon on the show. He's a lovely man.
Oh, he was so lovely.
He presided over the whole thing. Yeah,
we have lots of jokes and fun. It was such a friend. And the thing that people kept on saying who were talking is how friendly the Irish were and how happy they were. Yeah. And it just made you, like, I'm such a proud Irish person anyway. But to hear that was just made it so special.
And did it make a difference to you? Do you feel different now?
I really do.
Do you?
I was texting everybody. I mean, there's a few people, like my mother was so embarrassed, going, I hate you going on. Everybody would think you were pretending to. I said, I'm Irish, you know. And my friends, a lot of them didn't know. And they, you know, who've been friends for many years with me. And I really felt it made a difference. Like I was proud before, but now I can really kind of say it. And, you know, you tour the country, you represent your country many times at sometimes embassies and meeting people. And I'm always, you know, I'm a Cork girl, so I'll talk and talk, but I, you know, always champion home. And
with your British and French passports.
Yeah. And even hearing Jahab saying that about where you're from, because when I first came over, I would be very Irish, but, you know, people were saying, oh, you're from England or you're French or whatever. But, you know, to have it in a form, you know, like a certificate, and the day it arrived, and I was kind of overwhelmed. So it meant a lot, you know.
So what did you sing?
I sang actually a song, All You're Dreaming Of, which is something I heard from Liam Gallagher, funnily enough. And I suppose, you know, they asked me why I was singing that. And it was just a song I heard last year. And this kind of was a bit of a dream for me. And I think for many, that's what they said too. So that's why, you know.
Right, okay. And you played this particular instrument?
Yes, but I didn't play the instrument at the ceremony, but they played the music.
They played the video.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Which was great.
So the santur, it's a stringed instrument.
Yes.
How would you describe it to people?
Well, santur, it's an Iranian instrument, but the equivalent to santur in Europe would be cymbal and hammered dulcimer, which you have in Romania and Hungary.
Is it like a xylophone then for us? No, not
a xylophone, but with the strings and two hammers.
Two hammers.
And yeah, the sound of it is a little bit more delicate, I would say.
Is it like a sort of a deconstructed piano nearly?
Yeah, well, it's the action of the piano,
yeah,
the inside of the piano.
Yes,
because you have the hammers.
And the strings. Give us a blast of it there. Lovely. I was really transported there. That's the thing about music, Camille, isn't it? It sort of breaks down borders.
Well, it does. You know, I mean, I was saying to the researcher, I said, I'd love to sing a song with Jahab. I'm so moved by his music. You know, it's these two new citizens.
But you say it a week ago, we could have arranged something.
I'm sorry. We will come back. But you know, the thing of Bill, you know, I was thinking, what is that name for building spirit loss or spirit less?
Oh, yes.
You know, but it really was, you know, when you hear it, as you
there's
say, transports.
There's something magical about it. Yeah, there is something lovely about it. Yeah.
Thank you.
And is it sounds plaintive. Is it always played in a plaintive way?
Yes. Well, I use different techniques when I play in the band because I kind of have to adjust my sound with the banjo and double bass and my brother. But yeah, the kind of the nature of this instrument is very melancholic and very soft, you know.
Yes, yeah, yeah. The band you speak of is Nava.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's there's your brother, obviously, originally from Iran as well. And,
yeah.
And then two Irish guys.
Yeah, Niall Hughes and Paddy Kiernan, who are very good musicians.
Yeah. So it's sort of Irish-Iranian fusion.
Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we have some just so people, just
please.
People. Yeah,
play, yes.
Yeah. Papu, the Papu Polka.
Yeah, that's a.
Hold on, sorry.
I can give you a little bit of information.
Not it's, ready to dance yet.
not ready for polka yet.
It's, I'm ready.
Give me the nod when you're
ready. It's a piece that my brother composed, and it's actually inspired by a Kurdish melody combined by an Irish polka.
Right.
So the rhythm is polka, but the melody is Kurdish.
Kurdish?
Kurdish from Kurdistan.
Oh, yeah.
From
kind of... Kurdish, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
So...
Yeah, so the Papu Polka.
Enjoy it, yeah.
Can I do it now?
Of course. Sure. Go ahead. Yes. You ready for dance?
Yeah. Yes.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. We must get you in live.
Sure.
Will you do that for us?
Of course.
Yeah. And then and then we'll have Camille on as well. Yay. And she'll say... Well,
I'll dance the polka and I'll...
You'll still have to sing along. You'll have to sing along as well. This could be the beginning of something beautiful.
Sure.
Couldn't it?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. How was lockdown for you, Camille? Because as you said already, you didn't get much opportunity to sing publicly.
No. I think it's like for everybody, of course, it's devastating, you know, to be out of work. You know, it reminded me actually, you know, 20 years ago, I had a kind of situation after a car crash, I had to learn how to walk again. And just the whole thing of kind of your life being upside down. And then suddenly you separate the wheat from the chaff and you see what's really important to you. So this beginning of doing like work being taken and just being scared, I suppose, at the start, it was really about, I was so happy just to keep in touch with friends and family and that people were safe. And then I did a few online gigs. I was asked to kind of do one and I thought, oh, I'll make it a day in the life. So I did it kind of at home, little videos, but it was kind of bonkers where I was in my rollers or dancing on the table or out. I had made, because I was kind of at home in a situation, at a risk situation, I couldn't go out. So I kind of bought a tent online and made a festoon garden and made it and then went completely like I was kind of having a midlife crisis. So the pandemic happened at the same time. So I was learning how to hula hoop, roller skate, so close badly and tried to do yoga and exercise and then switched that to chocolate and drinking. And then, you know, so.
And you're nearly at the other side.
But what amazes me, why it reminded me of the accident was, you know, now I'm feeling like the light's at the end of the tunnel, but I'm a bit scared to go back into real life.
Yeah.
And when people ask me, because gigs are lined up at the end of the year and stuff. And I'm like, I quite like being in my home alone, cleaning it. And, you know, I've cleaned it so many times now, but I think definitely like recently I went, I asked Fergal, who I work with, to go into studio because I kind of, because I don't play an instrument, I was like, who am I now? So we went in and I just asked my parents, what songs do you like? My sister, what songs? My friends. And we just went in and recorded like 100 songs over like 10 days. And it was just, you know, as you said about, you know, going into a venue, it was just brilliant to go, oh, that's what I do.
That's what you do, you
know, but everybody's going through stuff. So that kind of weird situation, you know, you see restaurants close down and things, you're just like really feel for everybody, you
but
know.
But isn't it, that's a real thing. And it's been written about in the papers and I've chatted at home with Jenny about it.
Yeah.
This sort of re-emerging after lockdown. And there's fear involved and anxiety involved with that.
Yeah.
Because we've been doing this like on and off for 15, 16 months. And it is, whether you like it or not, it's the normal that we've got very used to.
Yeah.
And it's safe, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very safe.
It is.
Yeah.
Look, I drove into town this morning. I was sort of a little bit tetchy, you know, because it's the first time I've been in town in an awful long time, you know.
Yeah, I think it's funny. It's just, I suppose it just throws things on its head. You know, I loved hanging out with my seven. Like, I'm coming, you know, like everybody else, exhausted. But I suppose, you know, when your work has been so much part of your life, and then for a moment you just go. You're scared of things, but also you're just questioning what makes you happy, you know, what really, you know, and I'm finding for myself personally, you know, the first time I kind of saw my friends again, I was just, and also my, I'm not really sure how to interact with people. I'm gabbling away like this now, like my, you know what I mean? You're just so excited. I'm so excited. Like the lady up in RT, I couldn't even go, like the lady in reception, I was so happy to see her, you know? So
Julie, I'm sure she was happy to see
so
you
gorgeous,
as well.
She's
a lovely woman, yeah. The thing that's emphasised at the citizenship ceremony is, do not forget your past and bring it to us and share it with us.
Mm.
And Shahab, that's hugely important. And you're doing it in a real way, aren't you?
Yes, I'm trying to kind of bring my own music and my own heritage to Irish music. And it's been very kind of uplifting for me to do that.
And for everybody you encounter, I would imagine. And we'll have a richer, you know, culture at the end of it all.
I think it's a different narrative to Irish music and different outlook to it, which is always good to have different kind of...
And is it, I don't know, you've studied music, I don't know, maybe Camille, you know this, but can they all be traced back to one origin? Well, a lot of traditional folk music.
I don't know. Well, you see, because I came at it a strange way, I was an architect, switched into music without any training. Right. So I'm a chancer in many regards.
Maybe Shahab might know.
Well, I've worked with a lot of musicians from all over the world, and there are similarities between folk music from every single country in the world. And I imagine there used to be a day where the music sounds very similar to each other. But Irish music is particularly similar to Iranian and Indian music because of the history of this country.
Yeah.
You know, you could hear, and of course the language as well.
And how about us? Tell us about us. How good are we?
You're great.
No, it's not Irish at all.
I'm joking.
But it's been a positive experience for you.
Very positive. And like, even my colleagues in the band, they're very humble, very compromising and very easy to work with, and I'm very happy, you know. I think I'm the man who's very hard to work with. They're tolerating me. You know, I'm trying to become like them. You know?
Right. Well, more easygoing, isn't
it? More easygoing, less serious.
Yeah. It's only music.
They're very chill, you know. I'm not, you know.
Yeah, if you miss a note, just put an old diddly eye in there. It'll be fine. Yeah. Well, listen, great to talk to you both, and I'm looking forward to the collaboration. It's all about collaborations now.
Definitely.
So Camille featuring Shahab or whatever, Nava featuring Camille, any sort of permutation there. Shahab, good to see you.
Thank you very much.
Do you want to hear another little bit, maybe before we go? Do you want to? Yeah, Camille, we played another little bit on the sand tour.
Sure.
Here we go. Perfectly bookended. Thanks, Shahab. Shahab Cooey and Camille O'Sullivan, thank you very much. And congratulations on your Irish citizenship.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, a lot of people tried their hand at different things during lockdown. Mine was sourdough, not very successful. I saw a man on a preview of a Dermot Bannon show who built a house during lockdown. Peter O'Mahony, Munster and Irish rugby international, took to the garden and he did a really good job of it. And he's on the line now. How are you doing, Peter?
Very good, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Now,
good to talk to you.
People are going to be able to see you've been on Instagram, but there's a big thing happening this Sunday. You and Miriam O'Callaghan as part of BoardBeaBloom.com. Did you ever think, say 5-10 years ago, that you would be inviting Miriam O'Callaghan into your garden as part of Bloom?
No, probably didn't foresee it. No, was the answer. Yeah. To be fair.
So, how did it all happen, Peter?
Look, I've always been really interested in the garden in general. I've just been outdoors in general. It's always been part of my life. But obviously, I suppose with the lockdown and obviously with the way social media has gone, the insight into different people's lives, yeah. I suppose it kind of kicked off during the last lockdown more than anything. I've been putting up bits here and there, but obviously, being stuck at home and restricted not to go anywhere. I started putting, as I started to put more and more bits up, people started getting really interested and coming back with questions or different things here and there. And just kind of, it kind of kicked off and I enjoyed it. It's there's lots of things are forced these days in social media, but it's something that I love and it's really easy. So it doesn't
And you're obviously very good at it. You have, dare I say it, green fingers. I suppose for a lot of people who would know you from the rugby field, because you're a big lad, you don't take prisoners, let's say, it's sort of going, that's Peter O'Mahony, you'd die for the country nearly, that's the type of guy you are. And then to juxtapose that with you tending to your daffodils, it's just it's for some people just can't get their head around it. Do you understand that?
Yeah, I know what the angle you're coming from, I suppose. But everyone, again, it's something that people probably didn't realise before this. Yeah. But now they've had an insight. But it hasn't just started the last couple of months. I used to go down to my uncle in West Cork, and he used to grow things down there, and I absolutely used to love it.
Whereabouts in West Cork?
He used to live. He's moved back down now. He's Castledown Bear. But my two grandmothers had kind of nice gardens, and I used to love giving a hand to whoever was in there or doing a bit of work myself. Yeah. And when I got my own house, then it was kind of, we were lucky that it's an older kind of period home, and it has that kind of cottagey garden that lended its hand to being looked after well. Yeah.
Impressive. It's like very impressive. That arch, that's a lovely arch way there you have with all planted. And you went a bit overboard on the daffodils. Or are they narcissuses? which are they? They're daffodils, are they?
Tete-a-tete, they're called, yeah.
What are they called? Right. What are they called?
The type of daffodil they're called is tete-a-tete.
Oh, yeah. Right. There was a lot of them.
There was a lot, yeah.
You could have went to market with them. Yeah. So what, and you do fruit and veg as well in the garden?
Yeah, that's just kind of experimenting. It's not something I've done a huge amount of, but it's probably the most rewarding, having obviously something to produce, for the table at the end of it, particularly for the kids. I think it's a great lesson for them to see where things come from, and they're starting to ask questions now about, to what comes out of the ground or what comes off the trees, they're starting to get questions and enjoy it themselves. And I do think that's important for them to know where these come from.
Three. Ralph is the latest arrival. He came during lockdown.
He's 14 weeks now.
14 weeks. How is he sleeping?
He's good. You'd have to ask my missus that. She'd kill me if I gave any an answer, because to be fair to her, she's looking after him during the night.
And Ralph met his great grandmother. There, you put that up on Instagram. Is that on your side or on Jessica's side?
That's my side. Yeah. Right. Obviously, when she was cocooning, he didn't get a chance, and that's great. Over the last few weeks since she's been vaccinated, we've been able to get back to see her, which is, it's been difficult for lots of people in different scenarios, but not to be able to see someone that age is difficult as well.
What age is she?
She is 95 in November now.
Wow.
Yeah, very impressive.
Isn't that great that Ralph will have that memory. He won't have the memory now, but he'll be told. He'll have the picture and he'll have all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's great, yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Now, away from the grass of your lawn onto the rugby field, if you don't mind. So the Pro 14, you're in second place. You're playing Zebra in, what, Saturday week or Sunday week?
Friday week.
Sorry. Yeah, right. And so you have to win that section to play the winners of the South African section. And is that looking good?
It's out of our hands a little bit at the moment, but I think Treviso have won all their games, so they've Ospreys away.
Right.
So we need to win our game is all we need to worry about. Is the thing for Friday, and then whatever happens Saturday
after that. Yeah.
Happens. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Did I read that you said that you weren't available for the Lions tour? Is that the way it works? Did you sort of say I'm not available?
No. I made myself. I was asked, you know, was I expected to be picked for the Lions? And I said no. You know, obviously I missed a lot of the Six Nations and with the red card and that kind of thing. So I said I wasn't expecting a phone call, having not played in a big chunk of those
Nations,
games,
yeah,
which is obviously the shop window. You know what I mean?
Do you think about the red card? Because you know it was the first red card in an Irish jersey since 1977 or something. Willie Duggan.
Look. Obviously, the game is evolving and rules are evolving, and you know, there was obviously no intent or maliciousness in what I did. And you know, if I start thinking about every single little bit of movement, you know, I think it takes back from the parts of the game that I'm good at. And you know, that was unfortunate. Obviously, I didn't want to hit him in the head, but you know, at times in a contact sport, these things happen. And,
they do. As a fan, watching on the telly, like definitely there has been a huge change in the refereeing this season. You know, they've obviously been told that, you know, they have to be more strict, a lot stricter.
Yeah, absolutely. I think rightfully so. I think you need to protect players, you need to protect the welfare of players, and obviously you don't want to be getting hit in the head, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you need to police that. But it's difficult at times when you're, you know, you're trying to do a job and you're trying to do it well, and you know, some circumstances aren't in your hands and things happen, but this is part of the game that we're battling in, and that's just it.
And did you look back on it, Peter? Do you think it was fair?
That's what I'm saying.
That's the question, I suppose. Did you think it was fair?
Look, I ended up making contact with his head, and that's what deemed the red card these days. That to me is fair, because it's again player welfare issue. But there's a lot of it in the talk these days about concussion and you know the ramifications of what happens to people if they get numerous amounts of these things. So you don't want people getting hit in the head. You don't want people getting injured. So
no.
I think it's justified the way they're looking after players, to be honest.
Okay, back to boardbeabloom.com this Sunday. You and Miriam O'Callaghan. What part of the garden are you most looking forward to showing off to Miriam?
I do enjoy the garden when it comes to getting stuff off it, as I said, putting stuff on the plate. So I have a couple of nice planters that are a good height from my my back that I don't have to be bending down too much, and they look well at the moment with some of the stuff that's in it. So that area is looking well at the moment. But
do you think there's a career, some sort of a career out of gardening when the rugby thing finishes?
I don't know. Is the honest answer. I don't know. Would
you like to do something in garden?
I probably would. I probably would, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, I've always loved the outdoors and being outside, and I can't see myself, you know, sitting behind a desk. You know, I would prefer to be outdoors is a thing. So that would lend itself to something that I would enjoy. And I've been lucky enough to do something. I don't find a chore at any stage up to today, you know what I mean? So hopefully I can do something after rugby that I really enjoy.
Great. Well, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us. I'll just tell people one more time. Board Be a Bloom, it's part of the virtual Bloom offering, as they say. And it's Peter O'Mahony inviting Miriam O'Callaghan around to show her around his garden, 2:00 this Sunday. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah.
Good talking to you, and good luck
with
the rugby. See you. Bye, bye, bye.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good morning, Ciarán. Thank you very much. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Pat and Dum says, with regards to Shahab, a tree with two roots grows stronger. Beautiful music. And Mary Desmond Vesecki Vasegi, sorry. I'm an Irish woman married to an Iranian man and really enjoying your chat. And Bob says, I'm told the best part of the naturalisation ceremony is encouraging the participants not to forget their past culture. Aha, we mentioned that. And Albi says, your man there playing that instrument, it sounds very similar to a dulcimer. Lovely music. And Bill has been on. Ray, it was canopsia. Thanks so much. It's like an itch that has been scratched. Ah, says Bill. He was looking for the word about an empty building that was conspicuously empty. Usually something like a, you know, a concert hall or a school or whatever. Anyway, canopsia. Canopsia is the word he was looking for. Attention to all those living outside the greater Dublin area. Us guys, Rossiter Shoe Repair in Kilkenny do all dock repairs amongst other things. That's Michael Rossiter. There you go. Now it's time for our quiz of today. Today, the 3rd of June, and we have a prize thanks to the lovely people in the Castleknock Hotel, castleknockhotel.com. Their missed moments packages help you to celebrate things you may have missed out on last year, like anniversaries, date nights, birthdays, etc. Balloons, bubbles, and cake included. Sean McDermott, how are you doing, Sean?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. You're in Sligo.
I'm down up here in Sligo, yeah.
Is it a sunny day in Sligo?
It's absolutely lovely here at the moment now.
Right, and you're planning to get out into the garden just like Peter O'Mahony?
I might be as good a gardener as Peter O'Mahony now, but
Do you know what I forgot to mention to him? And sure, look, that's what happens all the time. But he has a collection of lawnmowers. I've never heard anybody with a collection of lawnmowers before, but there you go. So you run a pub. They don't like, they're getting rid of that wet pub labelling, aren't they? That's gone.
Oh, thank God. Well, yeah, I don't know where that came out of, but I just, it's there.
Yeah. When will you be open?
It'll probably be July now, I'd say, because we don't do food and have no place for our outdoor dining, so.
Okay. And when was the last time you were open, Sean?
15th of March, 2020.
Wow.
So, been a long holiday.
Yeah, yeah. How are you?
I'm fine. To be honest, the first few weeks was nice and enjoyable, and you'd get out on the bike and go here, there, everywhere, but kind of a bit boring as the winter one came in now.
Yeah, yeah. So you're chomping at the bit, I'd say, to get back.
Where to go?
Yeah, yeah. And it's just the chats and everything, isn't it? Just, you know.
Yeah, it's just mainly meeting people. And yeah. You've got contact with some people that you'd be meeting week in, week out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, not too long now. A month and a few days.
We've come through safe so far, so that's better.
Great, great. That's good to hear. You're up against Dermot O'Sullivan, who is in Dublin, but from Kerry. How are you doing, Dermot?
Hi, Ray. Great, thanks.
So it's sunny in Dublin as well?
It's lovely and sunny, yeah. Making the best of the weather now. It's going to last, I think, for the weekend, so hopefully.
So you're ironing outside?
I was ironing outside. Well, I was getting tired looking at the pile of ironing for the last week and a half, with school shirts and whatever, so I decided I'd like a bit of sunshine and I need to do the ironing, so bring it outside and do it.
Nice. I hope you had sunshine.
You'll be glad to know I've done that. I've finished. I've turned off the iron now. You have my full attention.
Right, okay. I hope you have sunscreen on, do you? You do?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. And you were planning a swim later on. Whereabouts?
I'm very lucky. I live in Cabin Teely, so we've got Killiney, 40 foot, and Sea Point in our kind of 6 kilometre radius. Yeah. So, Sea Being going to go to Sea Point.
Right.
And do a bit of a dip.
And do you swim, or just get in and get out?
I swim, yeah. For the last 2.5 years, I started at Christmas 2019. 2018, sorry. I started swimming at 40 foot and just said, could I do it every day for the 2019? And I've been doing it since, every morning.
Right.
Great bunch of us down there, yes. It's good fun.
And have you seen the numbers increase during lockdown?
Oh, hugely. We had to stop kind of going there during lockdown just from a social distance point of view. We switched to Killiney.
Right.
Because there's just a lot more room, and even Sea Point, there's a lot more space for people to, you know.
And I hope there isn't a them and us mentality, is there?
How do you mean,
No, we were here. We're the real deal. We were here way back.
No. As I say to everyone, like, it's fantastic to see so many people enjoying the natural amenities.
Yeah.
It's a little annoying, but I cycle down there so that I don't have to any hassle with parking.
Great. Okay, so Sean McDermott and Dermot O'Sullivan. There's a coincidence. Five questions each. Yeah. Good luck to you both. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If it's a draw, we go to a tie-break situation. Here we go. Right, Sean, first question for you.
On this day in 1966, the European Distance Radio Council formed in Copenhagen. In which European country would you find Copenhagen?
Denmark.
Correct answer. Dermot, on this day in 1961, US President John F. Kennedy and USSR Premier Khrushchev met in Vienna. In which European country would you find Vienna?
It's Austria.
It is. Right, we're on to second question for you, Sean. It's an audio one. Have a listen to this. On this day in 1982, Jodie Whittaker, actress, was born in England. She was the first female to play the lead role in that sci-fi series. Can you name it?
Doctor Who.
It is. And for you, Dermot, your audio question, have a listen to this.
I'm the champion and can't none beat me. That don't mean they're nothing. He's the number fourth man. He's young. He's getting better and better. A few years ago, Buckner was a kid coming around the gymnasium sparring with me.
On this day in 2016, that American boxer and former world heavyweight champion died at the age of 74. Can you name him?
It's Muhammad Ali.
It is Muhammad Ali, yes. Flying so far. Question three for you, Sean. On this day in 1862, Robert E. Lee took command of the Confederate armies of Virginia during the American Civil War. In total, how many U.S. states begin with the letter V? Two or three?
Three.
It's two. Virginia and Vermont. Okay. Dermot, a chance for you to go in front now. Similar question. On this day in 1959, the first U.S. Air Force Academy graduation took place in Colorado. In total, how many U.S. states begin with the letter C? Two or three?
Three.
Colorado, California and Connecticut. Three is the correct answer. Okay, three plays two. Sean, your fourth question is a music one. Have a listen here. And it's in 1967, that song Respect went to number one. Can you name the singer?
Is it Diana Ross?
No. Franklin. Aretha Franklin. Right. Now let's have a look at this. You're on two. You've one in hand. So, Dermot, if you get this right, Sean can't catch you. That's the way it goes. It's a music one. Have a listen to this.
I see a little silhouette of a man. Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me. Galileo, 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 Galileo.
On this day in 1976, that Queen song went gold, meaning over 1 million copies were sold. Can you name the song?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
There you go, there you go. You did get, you know, more probably slightly difficult ones there today that didn't suit you. Sean, we're going to send you out a Ray Darcy Show mug and wish you the best.
I give it pride of place.
Say again? Behind the bar. Yes, give it pride of place. Yes, yes. Do. Okay, we'll give you two then. We'll give you two. One for the pub and one for the kitchen. Okay, Sean.
Absolutely. Fair play.
Great talking to you. Mind yourself. Okay, good luck. See you. Bye. Bye. Dermot, well done.
Thanks very much. That's great.
Yeah, so you're going to the Castleknock Hotel at a time of your choosing and you can be involved in their Missed Moment packages. Castleknockhotel.com.
That's okay. Fantastic. Thanks very much.
Okay, Dermot, enjoy the swim. Good luck.
See you.
Cheers. Bye now.
Thanks
bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now you'll be delighted to hear that Dermot Bannon returns to our screens this evening and tomorrow evening and the evening after. No, no, I'm joking.
Why are you laughing, Ray? No. You're not supposed to laugh in an introduction. You're supposed to be bigging me up.
Oh, all right, sorry. Dermot Bannon, School of Broadcasting. Yeah.
Well, so, I do the rest of it.
No, you're okay. Okay. So it's Super Small Spaces. Yes. Dermot Bannon, Super Small Spaces.
Yes.
And it's Sunday night at 9:30. And that slot that you made your own with Room to Improve.
I don't know. We've two episodes. It's a little bit of a mini series. The first one is probably going to be a scorcher of a bank holiday weekend. Nobody will stay in. Right. And then the following one is the one where we're all let out.
So
I don't know if anybody, but if anybody cares, if anybody is stuck in and they can't get out, it's something to watch on the television.
Well, I watched it last night
because I got
a preview copy. I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. It is. And the first one, that lovely McCarthy family that we spoke to on the show,
They're making a converting a double decker bus into Airbnb.
Yes.
And you're helping them.
Well, I think when you spoke to them, you spoke to them at the start of their journey, and it was very much about their dad.
Yes.
and all that. And I thought when I went to meet them, it would be kind of pull on the heartstrings and it'd be lots of that. My God, I was so wrong. Yes, they do want to pull on the heartstrings and it is very emotional, but I've never met a family who are better crack.
Yeah.
So the journey was chaos. It was absolute chaos.
I've never seen as much colour. Like there's colour everywhere.
And I banished about half of that before. They had a pink front door going into it at one stage. That didn't make the cut. Like we had so much stuff. We could have made an actual episode about the bus, but that's not what it was about. We thought we were supposed to go down for one visit, have a chat with them, see what they're doing. And we fell in love with them so much. We said, we'll go back. Look, we'll come back at the end. And they said, we should probably go back in the middle. So it's like a little mini room to improve.
Throughout
the thing where
it's a spine.
Didn't think it was going to be that. It was on the sheets, you know, when you start into a TV program, you've loads of different options. And they were just, oh, we'll do one visit, and I was there. Yeah. A bus? Seriously, guys, it's not even a building. When I got to meet them, like they were just brilliant. So I think what really got me as well was it was the bus is brilliant, and I'm not going to give any spoilers how it turned out at the end. But also like they went like I'm sure listeners know, but like their dad tragically took his own life on the 1st of May last year. And what they did is they used this as a project to kind of to take their minds off things, you know. And rather than sitting drinking endless cups of tea, are you all right, ma'am? I'm okay. Are you all right, Rachel? Are you okay? They didn't. They just got stuck into it and had a bit of crack with it. And it's a great watch.
And even if people are out on Sunday night, I'm sure people will talk about it and they'll come back to it on the player.
Hopefully.
Yeah. It is one of those moments in television, I think.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think people are going to fall in love with them. People are going to fall in love with them.
It's hard not to.
Yeah.
But we've other stories in it too.
Yes,
it's a bit of a smattering of stuff. And I think the idea for the show.
And was that Kildare Town? Is he the brewer guy? Is he in Kildare Town?
He is. He's not in Kildare Town. Nace.
No, sorry, you're wrong.
He is in Kildare Town. Do you not see the big sign when you come into
Kildare
Town?
Yes, that's the family home.
And so it's in behind that. Yes. So
how would you describe that house to people? It's sort of
experimental. So basically, he went about trying to design a house that he could build himself, a kit house. So lots of kit houses are a great idea, but they need cranes, they need lorries, he said, can I make a kit house that I can put into the back of my car? And so it was designed around this arc. So the whole thing kind of slots together like a piece of jigsaw, but it's all done in small, manageable pieces, and it's very sustainable because of what he's using, the timber that he uses and the materials.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, I knew him before, but I knew him as a furniture designer. He had this idea in his head for the last 15 years. I think he designed the sculpture, if anybody knows, the entrance into the Mater Hospital.
Right.
Into the new Mater Hospital. He designed sculpture there. So this is his first ever building project. And he decided during lockdown, right, I have this idea in my head, I'm going to just go and do it. And it was really cool inside. It was like being inside an aircraft wing.
So he did it during lockdown?
All by himself. He was wrecked by the time we got there. So because he had been working on it for the year, and I suppose he knew we were coming down to film, and that gave him the momentum. Right. So
You're having a busy year because Room to Improve returns in the autumn.
It does. I suppose, when you say that it returns, I'm on it now, and we're in the really busy stage now where all the jobs are in sight. Because the first five months of the year, there was nothing really happening. Okay. We were going in for planning permission. We were sorting out all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then as soon as the sites opened, all of them went. It's never happened before. Normally in Room to Improve, one starts in sight, 2 weeks later, another one starts in sight. So if you're doing six projects, that's over 12 weeks. They all happened over 12 hours.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
For me.
You've been on Claiborne. You've been asked questions about the housing crisis.
Yeah.
We're back in the thick of it again.
Yeah.
Well, we never got out of it really, but it just wasn't in the headlines. So do you have one silver bullet, one brilliant idea that would solve the housing crisis?
It's supply. Like the whole reason we're in this mess is we just do not have enough houses. The population is growing and we're not building enough. And I suppose if there's one silver bullet, like we do have, there's a lot of vacant properties. I think there is 180,000 vacant properties up and down this country.
Mm.
And I think if we did something to help people, like a lot of them will need work and they may need, conservation officers, fire officers, if we can, they just take an endless amount of time to get through the system. So if maybe you help us, you want to do things properly. Like the housing crisis is not going to be solved in 2 years' time. It is going to take 15 years, whether we like it or not, right?
But isn't that a problem then? Because politicians are worried about
it's a problem whether we like it or
not. But they all they're worried about is getting re-elected.
Exactly. So they want to do a big scheme. They want to say, oh, we've put 4,000 units in tomorrow. Yes. And they love the idea of doing pods and all of that. Look, do you know something? Over the last few years, I've worked on a couple of different innovative housing things and all of that. And any politician I've met, their interest is there. It's just there's so many different components to it.
So many moving parts.
Yeah, there's developers, there's banks, there's financiers, there is the government, all of the housing bodies, and they all need to sing off the one hymn sheet. And it's a massive, and this problem has been getting progressively worse and worse and worse. And our population is growing and growing and growing. The gap is wide. But if we put our kind of neck next to it, we can get it done in the next 15 years, but it's going to take that long.
Okay.
And nobody's, you're right, nobody's going to take credit for it then.
Yeah. But go back to the programme on Sunday night, because you see this lovely place in Kilrush. It's a converted
pub. Brilliant. Yeah.
Converted.
And I have a bit of a soft spot for small Irish towns. Both my parents were, my dad was from the country, he's from Dungarvan, my mum is from Wexford, she's from just outside New Ross. And I just think we have some beautiful Irish towns. And I've been really lucky on Room to Improve to travel up and down. And like you spend a year in places like Fermoy and all that. And like I think coming over that bridge into Fermoy and you get the square, and yet all the buildings on it are empty and all.
So what's the solution to that now, for
just
example?
Just incentivizing people to get back into towns. Like, we do have to have a bit of a shift in our mindset as well, in that people want to live in towns. You grew up in a rural town, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, getting the plot 5 miles outside of town, getting yourself an acre and building a one-off house. If we can get people
It's never an aspiration I had, but anyway.
Lots of people do, because if they grew up in a town, they say they wanted to live in a bigger house. And there's no problem with that. But we have to build our towns and make them vibrant so that people will want to live.
But what about, like, just let's get quite specific here.
Yeah.
What about shop units? Because whether we like it or not, they're going to remain empty because people, and lockdown has accelerated the online shopping thing.
Yeah.
So unfortunately,
people can live in them. And there is some amazing spaces. Like, a lot of the old towns are Victorian towns or even Georgian towns. And so there's lovely tall ceilings, nice big rooms. They can quite easily be converted into houses. Then what you have is, if there's enough people living on the square, a coffee shop will pop up.
Yes.
And then a little bakery will pop up because people will demand it, or they'll see a niche.
And the ultimate thing is that they'll breathe life back into towns.
If you see towns where they've done it, where they've made a really concerted effort, places like Clonakilty, places like Westport, where they've
you've picked two ones that are they're not the norm,
but other towns can aspire to it.
Yeah, but like Clonakilty is just there; it has Inchidonny out the road. It's
I know,
near to
and
sea. Westport
is the same. But if we have a population,
it's easy to cite those.
No, it is, and you're right. Yeah. But if we have a population who are now moving back to rural towns, and there's an incentive for them there, like in Kilrush, that everybody was chatting about the amount of people who've moved back down home because they can work from home and they're working for big multinationals.
Wouldn't it be great to see them then populate the main streets?
Yeah, and populated by people who want to move back home, who are part of a local GA club, who've got family there.
Yeah.
Lots of people move to Dublin, Limerick, Waterford, not really by choice. It's because of work.
I was watching the 6 o'clock news last night, and Katrina Perry was broadcasting from the Europe Hotel in Killarney.
Yeah.
And she spoke to a lady, can't remember the lady's name or the man, but the man was the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Tralee.
Yeah.
And he did what I thought was the oddest thing ever. He did this sort of ad for Kerry.
Did he?
For people to come and work. He was doing remote working. Remote, his realness here to stay. Why not come to Kerry?
Yeah.
we're lovely down here.
But a lot of people are really considering that. They're thinking, right, if I can do my job at home, right, it means I can literally move anywhere in Ireland. I can live beside the sea. I can live beside the mountains. Wherever, like, our hobbies have become hugely important to us over lockdown, what we do. And then people want to go to the nicest place to do that. And it might mean a trip to Dublin, Limerick, Cork, Waterford once a week or twice a week to go to a meeting. But I think flexible working is going to be here to stay. And
wouldn't
it
be great if that was, a legacy of the lockdown?
I think it would be amazing.
Yeah, and breathe life back into small towns all over the country.
And small towns are very, very strong communities, and they're held together with the GAA clubs, as I said before, and things like that. And a lot of people who move out of them don't really, and I know lots of people who go home every weekend or they're travelling up and down.
So what do you say? They don't really want it, but they have to go where
work
is.
Yeah. And I think if there was a vibrant community and if there was people there and they could do their work and see family and have support network and somebody to mind the kids in the afternoon and all of that, I think that's what people want.
So in not to give away any spoilers or anything, but in Room to Improve, when eventually comes back in the autumn.
Oh, there's no spoilers in that because they're not done.
All right. But is there, have people changed their mind? You know, have you any examples of people working from home and changing the layout?
Everybody's working from home.
Right.
So home office is becoming a big thing. Storage, utility rooms, they're a big thing because people are kind of noticing clutter and mess and all that in their houses. So they're all, and we've won.
Oh, that's interesting. So people are looking around now because they're not going out to work.
They're not as focused on having the big table to entertain 25 people anymore.
Yes, yes.
They're more focused on, I just can't look at this clutter anymore. I can't bear it.
Right, so just, you have a minute now.
A minute now.
For people, just because people are still having problems with working from home and the office and all that sort of thing. What are your top tips for that?
Oh, for the home office, I think move it into the nicest space in your house, because the nicest, brightest space, most people work 8 hours a day. It's normally during daytime hours.
Yes.
If there's a bedroom that you're sleeping in and it's got lovely bright sunshine and there's a back bedroom that you go into because that's where the home office is, swap them over.
Right.
You know, just put yourself into a place
that's going to lift. It's 8 hours, yeah.
Yeah, and lift your... It's going to be where you're going to be spending most of your time, and put it into a nice room that you're going to enjoy going to. So you can bring up your cup of coffee in the morning, the sun is shining in and it gives you a bit of a lift. You're not thinking, Jesus, I'm at home again today.
Right. Good advice, Dermot Bannon.
Thanks, Ray.
So there's the two bits of advice, that and build houses, Irish government.
That's
the message, yeah.
And watch Super Small Spaces, which is a bit like, it's more than Super Small Spaces. It's clever. Like, some of them are a little bit bigger, but they're all buildings that have been built through adversity.
And it's 9:30 on Sunday night. Dermot Bannon, thank you very much. Cormac O'Hara is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.